This episode was first posted May 24th, 2010. I mentioned Skylar Standish, who plays the musical prodigy son in this film. Well, he passed away not long after this episode went up, on July 29th, 2010, so he was able to live a fairly long life, a lot like the woman who plays his mom here, Faye Ray.
This is Movies for the Blind, episode 128, Melody for Three, part two.
When is a woman ever decent when she wants to fight for a man?
Hello and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. We continue with Melody for Three, a return engagement for Faye Ray on this podcast, since she was also in The Evil Mind in episodes 45 and 46. Now, back then, I mentioned her Canadian roots and her notoriety as one of the first scream queens in films like her best known, King Kong. Her more domestic role in this film also marked the beginning of the end for the busiest part of her career. She would sort of retire from acting when she married the screenwriter Robert Riskin in 1942, but would turn up every once in a while in the odd film. She was even slated to make a cameo in the remake of King Kong in 2005, but passed away in her sleep shortly before filming and shortly before her 97th birthday. In this film, she's Mary Stanley, a small-town music teacher and part-time nurse for Dr. Christian, and she just happens to have a son, Billy, who's a violin prodigy. But she and the doctor have been keeping the secret that Billy is the son of a man who used to be called John Pierce, but is now known as superstar orchestra conductor Antoine Pirelli. Not even John knows about Billy, because Mary divorced him and ran away from Paris before she knew she was pregnant. But now John is in her small town of River's End, recovering from a plane crash, and Mary must decide if she should reveal her secret for the sake of her son's budding career. Let's find out what she does in the conclusion of Melody for Three. Later at home, Mary enters her living room in a lovely coat and hat. Billy stands.
Gee, Mom, what's going on around here this morning?
Why, dear?
Oh, you look sort of all shined up.
This may be a great day for us, Billy, darling.
Yeah?
They sit by the piano.
I'm going to take you to the hotel with me. And maybe, I'm not quite certain, Antoine Pirelli will hear you play.
Well, I thought we'd get a trip to Chicago or New York for an audition.
But this is Antoine Pirelli. You should be thrilled.
Sure. I'm thrilled, all right. I guess you are, too. Maybe that's why you're happy and sort of beautiful.
She gazes up at him.
Maybe before long, you'll know why I'm all shined up today.
Later, they walk through the hotel lobby and stop.
Now you wait here, Billy, until I call you.
Okay, Mom.
He sits down, smiling.
And wish me luck, darling. So very much depends on these next few minutes.
All right. I'll keep my fingers crossed.
She heads for the stairs. Soon after, in John's bedroom.
Come in.
When Mary enters, he gets up from a chair.
You were a long time.
Not long for a woman, John.
Oh, Mary, it's good to hear your voice again.
They hold hands.
To think after searching all over the world for you. The doctor gives me a sleeping pill and I wake up and...
She sits.
There you are, sitting beside me.
This morning you told me you were not quite happy.
He bends down to her.
Mary, darling, I haven't known a single happy hour. Not really happy since you left me.
I believe you, John.
She takes his hand again.
Jonah, I have a favor to ask you.
You name it.
I have a very talented pupil.
Pupil?
Yes. With a touch of your genius. I'd like you to hear him play.
Oh, of course, of course. Well, let's not talk of pupils and prodigies. We have ourselves to talk about. What?
He's downstairs right now.
Billy sits, fingers crossed. At the front desk.
I'm Gladys McClellan. I telephoned you for a reservation.
Yes, Miss McClellan. You have Suite C right across from Mr. Pirelli.
Thank you.
In the bedroom.
Well, I must. But I warn you, I'm only doing it to humor you. And after that...
He kisses her hands. Then looks up when Gladys walks in.
Darling.
He and Mary stand.
I see you're not too badly hurt.
Nothing serious?
And at the moment I got your call, and evidently I arrived just in time.
Gladys, this is Mary.
How do you do, my dear? Antoine is so devastating, isn't he? And the past master in the old continental custom of kissing the hand. But you mustn't take him too seriously. I suspected him of having a number of these little excursions since we've met. But I'm going to marry the man in 2 weeks. So I think it's time to call a halt. And now, I'll take charge if you don't mind. I think I'll be much more soothing than a new and pretty face, won't I, darling? He's such a susceptible old pet.
Mary turns to go.
Wait, Mary.
But John catches up.
I think you deserve an explanation.
Why, of course. But not now, darling. You're much too ill. And besides, I'm sure that this lady and I understand each other perfectly.
I'll call you later, Mary.
Without looking back, she leaves. John turns to Gladys, who sits at the foot of the bed.
Oh, really, Antoine? I've always suspected I couldn't trust you out of my sight. But to flirt like this with a little country girl.
That little country girl, as you call her, the woman I married in Paris 12 years ago.
As he steps to a window, she takes this in.
Darling, how very romantic. Did you tumble out of the sky by metal telepathy to find it here?
This is no matter for amusement.
I see. But Antoine, pull yourself together. After all, you've become an important public figure. And for you to be thinking of a woman like that, why, she'd hardly grace your dinner table. Listen, darling.
She stands.
I know how upsetting it must be, but you've got your career to think of. And I think I deserve some consideration.
Please, Gladys. I know all that. I'm terribly sorry.
Then for my sake, let's get on to Chicago. You'll probably feel different in a day or two. And if you don't...
Please, I'm not so confused. Later on, if you don't mind.
Later.
Good morning, Maestro.
Mickey enters.
Gladys told me you were better.
Yeah, I'm all right, Mickey.
Excellent, excellent. Now we'll miss only one day of rehearsal. I phone for accommodations on the next train.
Well, you can cancel.
What?
I suppose Gladys also told you about Mary.
Yes. It must have been sort of a shock. Old memories and all that,
and it's no good turning back.
Besides, we're good businessmen. We can't jeopardize our contract.
Can't you think of anything besides business and contract?
Sure, but this is a chance of a lifetime. $200,000.
I don't care if it's $2 million.
Mickey's smile fades.
I promised Mary I'd listen to one of her pupils play the violin.
An audition? Well, I thought we settled that sort of thing years ago. Why, only this morning I chased 20 child prodigies out of the hotel lobby.
Don't you understand, Mickey? This concerns Mary. I promised her.
So, you promised to hear a kid play the fiddle. Well, what's that compared to your other obligations? What about me? What about Gladys? You promised to marry her.
That, I think, is something that concerns Gladys and me.
John steps away from him.
Most important of all is that I promised myself something. 12 years ago in Paris.
This, after all I've done for you.
He sits.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Mickey, don't start that again.
Well, look what you are today. And look what you were when I found you in Paris. Plain John Pierce. A genius starving in an attic.
Oh, cut it, will you, please?
No, I won't.
He gets up.
I invented Antoine Pirelli. I put you over on the American public. I made you headline stuff all over the world. And this is the way you repay me.
John pats his shoulder.
No good, Mickey. Yeah, anything but a money bag for a heart.
John sits.
You'd understand. Now, if you don't mind, take the lair, will you?
That's done it. This is the end.
He heads for the door.
To think of the once great Michael J. Delancey.
He opens it.
Playing second fiddle to a small-town music teacher.
Wincing, he goes to the next room in Gladys. He glances at her. Then crosses the room to the phone. And picks it up.
Send up a double brandy, quick.
Make it two.
He hangs up. John also makes a call.
I'd like to talk to Mrs. John Pierce. You got the number for me, please.
but there's no Mrs. John Pierce in the directory, sir.
Really? But she lives here. She came here on my case last night.
Oh, that was Mrs. Stanley, sir.
Mrs. Stanley? Are you sure?
Yes, sir. She nurses for Dr. Christian.
Well, get her for me, please.
Yes, sir.
At the switchboard, the operator makes the connection. Billy answers the phone.
Hello?
Hello. Is this Mrs. Stanley's residence?
Yes, sir. This is Mrs. Stanley's house.
May I speak with her, please?
Well, I'm sorry, sir, but my mother isn't here just now.
Did you say your mother?
Yes, sir. Mrs. Stanley is my mother, but she's gone out of town.
Oh, I see. Thank you.
They both hang up. Later, Billy enters Dr. Christian's as Mrs. Hastings brings in the newspaper.
Hello, doctor.
Hello, Billy. What are you doing around here?
Did you forget that this is your day off? No. I just thought... Well, mother went out of town for a few days.
Out of town? Why?
I don't know. We went to the hotel for an audition, and pretty soon mother came down looking awful sick, and we went home.
Didn't she give an explanation?
No. She just cried like anything and said she had to go away.
Well, you'd better stay here, Petey, until she returns.
Run along upstairs. Take a spare room.
Thanks.
With his hands in his pockets, he walks away.
It's all in the paper, Stocking.
She gives him the paper, and he reads. The headline, Famous Visitors Pledge Troth, with photos of John and Gladys.
I can't understand it. If you'd seen him with Mary just now...
Well, from what I hear, this Gladys McClellan usually gets what she wants.
He makes a call.
Operator, give me the hotel. I want to speak to Mr. Pirelli, please. I see. Thank you.
He hangs up.
It checked out. Was she called?
Thought so. Well, I guess that finishes there.
Mrs. Hastings walks off, but Dr. Christian sits thinking. Later.
Those are mighty good pancakes, Mrs. Hastings.
There you are, Doctor. Another of your medical theories shot full of holes. Who says the human stomach only holds one quart?
Well, when a fella gets a free meal, he ought to make the most of it.
That's right, Billy.
Yoo-hoo, Billy!
He shifts awkwardly.
Sounds like Nancy.
Yeah.
Better hurry. Women hate to be kept waiting.
You bet they do. I know.
He leaves out the front door.
You better prescribe for yourself this morning. You didn't eat a thing.
Smoking his pipe. He paces to his desk.
There's no use, Doctor. In spite of all your knowledge and medical research...
He sits.
You'll never know why a woman acts the way she does when she's in love.
I don't know what Mary was thinking about.
Thinking? Women don't think. They feel. They haven't got any brains. Just a few assorted emotions. And only about three of those.
The strongest being to protect her young.
That's number one.
I suppose she thought it was the decent thing to do... To walk out like that.
Decent? When is a woman ever decent when she wants to fight for a man? That's emotion number two.
Not much fighting, Mary. When the other woman showed up in the scene...
Other woman? There's always another woman. That's when the fight really gets going. That's number three. Oh, no, Doctor. A man will never realize what makes the wheels go round in a woman until he's married to one and gets it beaten into his head with a rolling pin. Then he says he's misunderstood.
Getting up, he steps to a window and watches Billy standing forlorn with Nancy.
A boy like that has the right to know his own father. And a man like John Pierce has the right to know he has a son.
Well, why don't you stop worrying and do something about it? You're Billy's godfather.
So I am.
He heads for the front door.
How much money have I got in the bank?
Oh, about $136. And we need it all for bills.
It's not going to be used for bills.
Well, what are you going to do?
Gamble. For big stakes.
He walks outside.
Billy. Billy. Go home and put your Sunday suit on. You're going to Chicago.
Chicago? Me too?
No, dear, not this time. Maybe we'll bring you a present. What would you like?
A new slingshot.
Run home and pack a bag.
Know how?
Of course he doesn't. I'll have to do it for him. Come on, you.
She pulls Billy away. Later, a train speeds through the night. Next day, in a busy lobby,
Northern Broadcasting Company.
The doctor arrives with Billy, who carries his violin case, at the information desk.
But my daughter has the most marvelous voice. She can sing high C. High C, dear.
The big girl pulls down her hat and takes a deep breath.
No, no, not here.
Madam, I told you that auditions are Wednesdays and Fridays only, and never in the lobby.
Very well. I shall take Emma to the Excelsior Broadcasting Company.
Assure you, madam, that is the law.
The doctor and Billy approach.
Audition Wednesdays and Fridays only.
We are not here for an ordinary audition. We wish to speak to Mr. Pirelli.
Signor Pirelli, rehearse the fifth floor.
Thank you.
Oh, you can't see him. No one is allowed in the rehearsal room except staff and sponsors.
Oh, but this is urgent. We've come a long way.
Sorry, sir, but we don't violate the rules for anyone.
As the receptionist lowers her head to write, the doctor glances at the elevators nearby. Checking she's still looking down, he takes Billy's hand and steps toward them.
And a pass is required for all elevators, and the stairway doors are locked on all landings.
Across the lobby,
a complete tour of the Northern Broadcasting Company for 40 cents. Get your tickets, folks. See how radio works for only 40 cents. See the world's greatest and newest phenomenon, television.
The doctor takes Billy that way. In an office.
I think you will be pleased with the office, Signor Pirelli. We've spared no expense in assembling the best men. Have you any orders to give before we start the rehearsal?
Oh, I beg your pardon.
You'll have to speak louder, Mr. Simpson. Antoine is here only in the flesh today. His mind is far, far away.
I asked if you had any orders, sir.
No, none.
On the tour.
This is the master control board. The sounds of any program emanating from this company are mixed in the monitor room of the studio, communicated to this board, and cleared here.
Standing with a romantic couple, the doctor and Billy listen with various others, including a couple men and a mother with two children. Later.
And this is the artist corridor with dressing rooms on either side.
They gather at the end.
Here the great ones of radio and screen relax.
Oh, if Clark Gable should come out, I just faint.
Or Carol Lombard.
Shirley Temple for my dough.
It's a good thing Nancy isn't here.
You'd better. She'd sock me in the eye.
This way, please.
Do we have to go now? Can't we wait till some of the stars come out?
They rarely come out before sundown.
They move on to a demonstration room.
May I present Mr. Mortimer Effington, who will give you a practical demonstration of a few sound effects used in radio broadcasting.
Ladies and gentlemen, most common among sound effects is the opening and closing of a door.
The doctor checks his watch anxiously as Billy watches Effington.
In any manner, shape, or form. Now, when you hear a door opening and closing on a radio program, you can rest assured it is a door.
He turns a small door on a table.
Door opening. Door closing. Now the sound effect of soldiers marching.
He moves a device with little rubber pegs tapping on a surface.
Now you see, as the soldiers march, we have a little carousel of race so they come in the sound effects that bring all the types of sandwich faded, as it be. Formerly, we only had two rows of pegs. Then we added one more row, you know, since conscription. Now we have the horse's hoof. This is the calibration faded. Now watch the capsule.
He drums two cups on his chest.
That's the gallop of the horse when he created horses. Now the milkman early in the morning and brings in the milk to celebrate. Horse face to face, your horse, you hear them, he says, open the window, where you are, face to face, the camera. And now the most difficult of all sound effects to achieve, the opening and closing of elevator doors.
He slides grooved roller skates along a track.
Oh, that's only a roller skate.
What are the wild waves saying?
He picks up a drum cut lengthwise and filled with pellets and waves it.
Storm at sea.
He sets it aside.
Now that effect is achieved by BB shots and a drum head. That's why we search all little boys and make them check their air rifles at the front door.
The doctor remains anxious.
You understand that all sounds are not created manually. We have to go and see the files of the phonograph records, and we just scatter play the device. Now the airplane zooming and zooming.
He plays a record.
Must be something wrong with the cat. Now, if you want a battle scene, all you gotta do is save the fodder and put it right...
He puts the player's needle off the turntable.
The device on the home of needles and puts all the sound effects today to me. So far into the night.
In front of a prim woman...
And this little instrument.
He picks up a sliding stick.
A champagne cork popping.
He shoots it toward the woman.
Why do you cheapskate? Let's throw a party.
He keeps pointing it at her, startling her, but she keeps her composure.
Have I made myself perfectly clear?
Please, I'd like to know how you simulate the sound.
Oh, of course. Sound. You see, as we take the little voice to Spade and we go through the sound of the microphone, we don't have a little set of radius. We just came across by bringing the cat boss and all the way through his fork. The cat Spade will find she has to go through the whole week, and the sound effects coming back to the boss in the face.
Later.
Here, ladies and gentlemen, we have a television broadcasting camera. In that room is the receiving set. Now, if you would just step in there, we will give you a practical demonstration. If someone, young man...
Billy stops.
Would you like to go home and say that your voice and picture had been broadcast by television?
Boy, that'd be cute.
And step this way.
Do your stuff, baby.
While the doctor joins the other guests in the next room, Billy stands on a platform before a large camera.
There you go.
The doctor sits with the others in front of a screen. At the cameraman's signal, all lights but the ones on Billy go down, and he appears on the screen.
Well, I don't know what to say, but I'm mighty glad to be here. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes.
Glancing through a nearby window, Billy leaves the platform, then hurries into the other room and finds the screen off.
Well, I don't see anything.
It's pretty hard to see yourself on television, unless you could be in two places at once.
Oh, I have to be twins, wouldn't I?
In the office.
The announcer will merely say, Mr. McClellan of the famous McClellan product takes pleasure in presenting Signor Antoine Pirelli in his orchestra.
John has his back to everyone.
Do you follow me, Mr. Pirelli?
I doubt it.
He turns.
Oh, yes, I follow. I'm sorry to be so distracted today.
Well, well, welcome home from River's End.
Soon after, they enter a studio with a full orchestra. John approaches two violinists.
Weingarten, I'm in luck to have you with me.
A great privilege, senor.
Cassius Idle, my dear fellow. It's a long time since we played together.
Not since our firing day.
That's right. All right, gentlemen.
John steps up to his podium.
We'll start with the letter B, second movement.
In the hall.
On your left, we have Studio I, where rehearsals are now in progress for the McClellan Symphony Hour. Antoine Pirelli conducting.
The doctor and Billy pause there.
Here is the room for the relaxation of the personnel of the broadcasting company.
The doctor cracks a door open briefly.
Down this way.
He and Billy hide in an alcove away from the tour, which continues on around a corner.
What are we playing, Doctor? Cops and robbers?
Listen, Billy. For the next few minutes, you must do exactly as I say. And not ask any questions. Understand?
Yes, sir.
In the studio, John raises his conductor's baton to begin. The doctor sneaks in with Billy, and they stand at a distance behind John.
Let's try it again, gentlemen. This time, just a little lighter on the staccato. All right? Better be.
You know that?
Sure.
Take out your violin.
As he does, John turns to Seidel to begin the solo. Looking across the studio, Seidel stops playing and lowers his violin and bow, watching Billy play. The doctor stares toward John, who notices Seidel not playing. Still conducting, he looks around, confused. When Seidel points his bow, John turns back to Billy. Gladys, Mickey, and Simpson turn to him too. Billy walks toward John, who's still conducting. The doctor watches. John conducts Billy a couple feet apart from each other. Thinking, he lowers his baton and taps it on the podium, then approaches the boy.
Where did you learn to play that passage like that, my boy?
My mother taught me, sir.
Your mother?
The doctor steps up.
Dr. Christian, who is this boy?
Mary's favorite pupil.
The one you were to listen to.
John turns to Billy.
What's your name, son?
Billy Stanley, sir.
As Billy steps to the podium, John stares after him.
That's what he's called in River's End?
John turns to the doctor.
But his real name is William Pierce. William Pierce?
The doctor nods, and John turns to Billy again. He approaches him, then turns him around, and holds him by the shoulders.
You play well, my boy.
Later, with Gladys in the office.
Memories die hard, don't they, Antoine?
What do you want me to do, Gladys?
There's only one thing for you to do. I'll do the rest. You know, I might be able and capable of coping with her. But a son, that's too much for me. So I'll bow out.
You're being splendid about this.
No. No, I'm not really, dear. I couldn't marry you and have those memories coming between us. Every time you took me in your arms, I'd know that you were thinking of her.
In another office.
Gee, Doctor, it's all kind of mixed up.
No, it's been a little mixed up for me, too, but it'll all be straightened out now.
I don't know. How do you talk to a guy when you've just found out he's your father? What'll I call him?
I wouldn't worry about that. I'd just say, well, just whatever you feel.
I know. I'll just say, how do you do, Father? No, that's too stiff and formal-like. How, Daddy? No, that's sassy.
He paces, then stops.
Hiya, Dad. See, that sounds pretty good.
Sounds pretty good to me.
As he practices shaking hands, John walks in with Mickey.
Hello, son.
Hiya, Pop.
Dr. Christian, hadn't you better take Billy to my hotel and after lunch tomorrow, take him out to the ballpark to see the White Sox play. Would you like that, son?
Boy, that'd be super.
And say, maybe you better get a couple of suits of clothes. Dr. Christian will help you pick them out. And a dinner coat.
Gee, you mean one of those with a hard-boiled shirt?
Sure. If you're going to hang around this Mickey guy, you got to get used to a stuffed shirt.
He heads for the door.
But Maestro, please, the rehearsal.
Now look, Mickey, I'm tired of being a puppet. You've pulled the strings long enough. From now on, I'm going to stand on my own hind legs and cast a shadow. I've got some unfinished business to attend to, but I'll be back in time for the broadcast, and that's all you need to know. How's that, son?
That's telling him, Pop.
Oh, Dr. Christian, take good care of my boy.
The doctor puts an arm around him.
I always have.
John leaves. Later at the doctor's, Mrs. Hastings tunes the radio for some friends.
In a series of symphonic broadcasts conducted by Antoine Parelli, our guest soloist is a boy violinist making his debut in radio, Antoine Parelli, Jr.
At the Higbys,
he will play the arrangement of the Brahms Hungarian Dances made famous by his proud parents, Antoine Parelli, Sr.
Nancy beams at her mother and the pupils listening. In the studio, John conducts the orchestra while an audience watches on the other side of a window. Billy begins his solo. Beside the doctor in the audience is Mary. Turning to each other, he takes her hand and she returns the gesture happily. Then they go back to watching Billy play beside his conducting father. Watches on the verge of tears, and Billy glances at him. doctor and Mary keep watching. Mrs. Hastings and her guests keep listening. Mrs. Higby lolls her head back as she listens with her charges, and Nancy stares at the radio adoringly. While in the studio, Billy plays on calmly. John keeps his composure to continue conducting. At Mrs. Higby's, she gazes into space.
I always said Billy was a genius.
She turns to Johnny.
Hey, Johnny, tell your father I can make you a genius, too. With a few extra lessons.
Johnny grins, revealing a missing tooth. In the studio, Billy plays as his father conducts and his mother watches with Dr. Christian. Over the orchestra into the audience. Mary gazes at him, and he nods to her, then turns again to their son. Described for Movies for the Blind. And that was Melody for Three. Every note you heard Billy play in this film came from the young actor who played him. Schuyler Standish was himself a violin prodigy, and although he was about 13 at the time, he was studying music and concert performance at UCLA. Over the years, though, his virtuosity would move from the concert hall to the canvas. Since the 1950s, he's been a highly regarded painter. Now retired from a 30-year career as a high school art teacher, he keeps creating modernist works which regularly show in galleries all over the U.S. Coming up, a movie in three parts about another artist, but an artist of love.
Hey, Conchita! Woo! Don Juan is in town!
I was all alone, and suddenly a man walked in. His hat so... His sword, so. And I knew.
A little actress with no more than two lines and a pretty ankle. He noticed her. Within the year, leading lady. Married to a marquis living with a duke.
He will bring me this king of hearts.
But you are the king of hearts, Don Juan. What are your symptoms?
Well, nowadays when I sit down to a quiet game with a lady, I'm no longer sure of holding the card.
Don't climb more than one balcony a day.
Oh, I don't.
Last night you climbed at least 10.
Well, why do you want to see Don Juan?
I want to be like him.
You dress like him?
Yes, I do everything like him.
Where were you last night?
Oh, I had a grand time. I climbed nearly every balcony in Seville.
Did they think it was me?
They did.
Well, there's only going to be one Don Juan in this world.
That's The Private Life of Don Juan. Next time on Movies for the Blind. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. And the movies are from the Internet Archive, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.
Thank you.